This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
For Master Dogen's 300 koan Shobo Genzo, Case 129, Yao Shan's non-thinking, the main case. When Master Yao Shan was sitting in meditation, a student asked, "What do you think about sitting there in steadfast composure?" Yao Shan said, "I think not thinking." The student said, "How do you think not thinking?" Yao Shan said, "Non-thinking." The commentary. Abide in neither thinking nor not thinking. Thinking is linear and sequential, a separation from the reality that is the subject of thought, and thus is an abstraction rather than the reality itself. Not thinking is suppressive. It cuts away thoughts the moment they arise, making the mind into a great impenetrable mountain, dead and unresponsive. Non-thinking has no such edges. It's the boundless mind of samadhi that neither holds on nor lets go of thoughts. It's the manifestation of the Buddha mind in which the dualism of self and other, thinking and not thinking, dissolves. This is the Dharma of thusness that is the right thought of all the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. The verse. When the Dharma wheel turns, it always goes in both directions. The still point is its hub. And from here, all of our myriad activities emerge. Rather than give solace to the body, give solace to the mind. When both body and mind are at peace, all things appear as they are, perfect, complete, lacking nothing. In the fascicle by Master Dogen, Lancet of Self-Inquiry, he spoke, saying, verifying the teachers of the great masters, we should study and participate in the correct transmission of fixed sitting. This is the investigation of fixed sitting transmitted in the way of the Buddha. So we're studying Buddha ancestors, the Sangha, the way of the Buddha is this, Dogen says, the investigation of fixed sitting, which here Kazen Daroshi translated as steadfast composure. Verify that the teachings are the Dharma of the great enlightened beings, and so study and participate in the correct transmission. And so Zazen is this transmission. Practicing Zazen as Buddha Dharma is to engage in an ongoing moment-to-moment transmission, mind-to-mind, student-to-teacher, teacher-to-student. It is outside the scriptures. It doesn't rely on words. It is direct pointing and realizing Buddha mind. How do we receive this transmission? We all come into practice with some measure of faith. And on the basis of that, we practice. And through practice, we verify. We confirm for ourselves what the teachings point to. And in that, there is transmission. Because what is experienced is not a confirmation of knowledge, but a realization of Buddha mind. I told the story of when Dadaroshi, many years ago, I think he was at the temple, and was sitting in a group of students and talking about realization. And it being passed on generation to generation since the time of the Buddha. And somebody said, but isn't that like, you know, passing on a message, or the telephone game, where you, every time you convey something to the next person, some of it is lost. And he said, no, it's not like that. And they said, how come it's not like that? And so he slapped the person next to him and said, pass that on. So they slapped all around the circle. And when he came back, somebody slapped him, and he said, yep, it's intact. Because it's experience. To encounter the teachings is essential. Otherwise, how can we engage in the transmission of Buddhas and ancestors? But what's realized is not Buddha Dharma. What's realized is realization. And so how do we rely upon the Buddha ancestors, but without turning away from the self? This is not an insignificant question. How do we wholeheartedly have faith in the Buddha ancestors, past and present, and not turn away from the self? That's why it's not an abdication to have faith, to trust the teachings, the teacher, is not an abdication of one's own responsibility. It is to decidedly practice conditioned mind. But one has to do that using the conditioned mind. And so that's why we study the teaching, study with a teacher, is so that we can gain trust in what is true and what is not true. But all along the way, each of us, as the student, is deciding to take it up or not, to engage or not, to practice or not, to correctly transmit mind to mind, generation to generation, sitting in steadfast samadhi. In Bendoa, someone asks a question. There are many gates for Buddha Dharma. Why do you recommend Zazen exclusively? Dogen says, because this is the front gate of Buddha Dharma. Master Shakyamuni authentically transmitted this splendid method of attaining the way, and all Buddha Tathagatas of the past, present, and future attain the way by practicing Zazen. For this reason, it has been transmitted as the front gate. Furthermore, all ancestors in India and China, Korea, Vietnam, all the places where this practice of the Buddha has been transmitted attain the way by practicing Zazen. And then he says, know that fundamentally you don't lack unsurpassed enlightenment, and you are replete with it continuously. But you may not realize it, and so be in the habit of arousing discriminating views and regard them as real. And so he said a mouthful right there. Not a one of us is lacking in enlightened nature. We are replete with it continuously. There is no gap. But when it is not yet realized, we may be in the habit of arousing discriminatory views and regarding them as real. This is what we call delusion. This is what we call suffering. So we can think of Zazen as a method, a technique, a practice. But what Dogen is saying is that it is something that we have received, and that having received, in a sense, the seed, then it has to be correctly transmitted. So we could say that all of our whole lives of practice and training is to is to realize this mind-to-mind transmission of sitting in steadfast composure. And composure here is samadhi, tranquility, serenity. The front gate of Buddha Dharma, to realize that which is originally perfect, complete, and lacking nothing. But these discriminatory views is where we get hung up. There is no other hang up, really. And regarding them as real, that's how we get hung up. That, in a sense, the view combined with regarding them as real is how we get confined. Regarding them as real means to see them as having their own inherent power. That the thought itself, the karmic pattern itself, the emotion, the feeling, the belief, the memory, has its own power, its own ability to cause us something. To be elated and to be depressed, to be joyful, to be sad. And so we practice the arousing of these discriminatory views. And we see that there are views that just arise. You know, you're sitting there doing zazen, kind of minding your own business, and something arises, right? A memory, a thought, a feeling. And it's not that you sat there and thought, okay, I want to have this thought. It just arose. And so those arise due to past karmic actions. In that moment that it arises, that's understood as the fruit of past actions. And so in that sense, everything that we experience with our senses is the fruit of past intentional actions, the consequence of which is arising in that very moment. And that's why that moment is a pivot point, is a turning moment. Because it either turns back into that discriminatory view and the suffering that it creates, and it strengthens it. And that's what happens when we deny it or hold on. Or it shifts in a new direction when we don't deny it and we don't grab onto it. And so that's why when we get lost in thought or when we indulge in these patterns, it's not just that we're missing those moments, which is true, but in a sense, what's more consequential is that we are establishing that as the pattern in a future moment. We're establishing that as our life, in essence, to come. Whereas when we practice it well, then we're shifting that karma. And so there are those views that just seem to arise of their own, and then there are those things that arise because we seek them out. And so it's really important to notice how at different moments when you get bored or it's usually when there's some dullness, boredom, or it may be when you're actually experiencing a deeper level of sitting, a deeper state of steadfast composure, that we get anxious. And so we go seek out something to engage in, some activity. And since you're stuck there on the cushion, the most available activity is your mind, of course. And so we bring something forward to engage in, to distance ourselves from actually deepening ourselves in Zazen. And if we don't see that, if we don't recognize what's happening, then it just keeps happening. We just keep doing it. And it can just seem as though we just lost our awareness. But when we are more attentive, more careful, we can see those moments when we're actually making a choice. And yet, it's also important to understand that Zazen is not just aiming at a state of peace and calm achieved through mental blankness. Right? And this has been I think many, many people, not just Buddhists, but who practice meditation, that may be the view of what their meditation is about, is that if they can just bring their mind into calmness, that's the point. Or that may even be what they consider enlightenment, to be free of thought. But that's not Buddhism. To realize the absolute, we chant, is not yet enlightenment. Because discriminating thoughts appear to obscure unsurpassed enlightenment. But that's not true. Nothing has its own power. So beneficial thoughts like right intentions, the great aspiration of bodhicitta, does not itself have the power, saying those words, having that thought, does not itself have the power to move us forward. Or thoughts of self-doubt, self-criticism themselves do not have the power to hold us back. If so, then the idea of just eliminating those negative thoughts and having those good thoughts would catapult us into liberation. But it doesn't. And so the student asked Master Yaoshan while he was sitting, what do you think about sitting there in steadfast composure, sitting in fixedly? Yaoshan says, I think, not thinking. This is a good example of using how language is used to break it all apart. I think, not thinking. Dharoshi says, abide in neither thinking nor not thinking. Thinking is linear, sequential. One thought leads to the next. Following a belief system, following a view of how the world works and who we are. It creates a separation from the reality that is the subject of our thoughts. So we're thinking about something. So you, the thinker, have a thought about something. And so it creates separation from subject, object, and action. And so it's an abstraction rather than the reality itself. And so that very thought process creates the sense that that separation is true. As we think about something, it reifies, strengthens the sense that that thing that I think about is outside of myself. In the same way that when I go to the teachings or seek out a teacher for the teachings or to realize liberation, in a subtle way, it creates a sense that those teachings and that liberation is outside of myself. Not thinking, he says, is suppressive. It cuts away thoughts the moment they arise, making the mind into a great impenetrable mountain, dead and unresponsive. So everybody tries at various times to rely on not thinking, right? If we own up to it. We all have moments when we try to practice Zazen by just stopping our thoughts. And we might try that intermittently. That might be what Zazen is for us. And not only is it, well, it is suppressive, but it's dead and unresponsive, but it's also very brittle, right? Because the energy it takes to try and stop the thoughts is considerable, right? So there has to be a considerable sort of forceful energy to try and stop the thoughts. And of course, the moment you relax that energy, boom, right? And so what that's showing us is that we are not developing steadfast composure. We're not developing samadhi. We're just momentarily cutting off the flow. It's sort of like building a dam. You build a dam, but it doesn't stop the water from flowing. And so eventually, you either have to keep building the dam higher and higher, thicker and thicker, or not. And it's easy to see why all of us try that at certain moments as we meet, confront our seemingly inexhaustible energetic mind and, get frustrated with trying to bring it into steadfast composure. And so being frustrated, then we become a little bit more forceful. Or just in applying effort as we need to, that appropriate level of effort in meeting that flow of thoughts, that karmic energy, becomes aggressive and controlling. But sooner or later, what is supposed to happen is that you see the limitation of that. You see that it doesn't work, right? It's not effective over, beyond that moment. And in that moment, if you really pay attention, you realize what you're having to do that. So while you're doing that, you're probably pretty uncomfortable, tense. Your body may be hurting, particularly during sesshin. And then when you try and continue that practice off the cushion, it's very, very difficult. It's like there's very little continuation of Zazen. And so seeing that, we realize there has to be another way. It's also just exhausting. Period. And in a way, it's no different than, lots of other strategies that we have towards things that are difficult. It's just, either sort of give up and just jump in or just try and stop it. Stop it. And so when John Wellwood talks about spiritual bypassing, in a way, this is an aspect of what he's talking about. He says, when we're spiritually bypassing, we often use the goal of awakening or liberation to rationalize what I call premature transcendence, trying to rise above the raw and messy side of our humanness before we've fully faced and made peace with it. Now, he's talking about what Dottie used to call the psychological bilge, the stuff in the boat, the water that gets in and gets stuck in the boat, and it gets mixed with gas and oil and who knows what. You don't want to go down in there, it's just kind of nasty. And then you have to pump it out. And so he's talking about this bilge that, we don't want to deal with. It's just funky. And so why not just transcend it? Sounds good to me. Let's just transcend it, right? Let's just avoid all that funky stuff and rise above it. And so, so what I'm talking about is sort of at a more basic level of just trying to rise or transcend or leap around, pass around, just the basic state of mind that we're practicing in Zazen. But of course, that mind, which is thinking and emoting and moving into the future and dwelling, lingering in the past, is the stuff of that psychological bilge. It's the self arising. And in each of those moments of arising, that's the fruit of our life, right? The fruit of our karmic actions that need to be practiced in those moments. Otherwise, they persist and persist and persist. If we don't practice them well, we're guaranteeing ourselves that we will have to continually do that. We're not freeing ourselves. And so he says, trying to move beyond our psychological and emotional issues by sidestepping them is dangerous. It sets up a debilitating split between the Buddha and your humanity. You know, I recognize, I'm willing to admit that I'm deluded, but I'm kind of in a hurry to be enlightened. So if you don't mind, step aside, because I'm going somewhere fast. And so we have to, because when we encounter what we call our humanity, what we recognize as our humanity, which is nothing other than Buddha, we don't see it that way. Not seeing it that way, we don't want to practice it that way. Not practicing it that way, it becomes something else. And so then not thinking starts to look like a good strategy. Just don't think about it. He says it leads to a conceptual, one-sided kind of spirituality where one pole of life is elevated at the expense of its opposite. Absolute truth is favored over relative truth, the impersonal, impersonal over the personal, emptiness over form, transcendence over embodiment, detachment over feeling. And so we can appreciate how important the middle path is. That at all times, in all moments, encountering all phenomena, to not resort to the extreme of negation, and not to resort to the extreme of perpetuation. That's what practice is that place. You know, and I think part of what leads to this is a sincere desire to practice, to move forward on the path, to try and embody, you know, cultivate and embody those qualities that the teachings speak of, those virtues. And so, and that's all happening within this, you know, very, very well-established game plan of you're either succeeding or you're failing, right? Because in our system of worlds, usually it pretty much comes down to that. You're either one or the other. And so when we encounter something that definitely doesn't look like success, our humanity, well, then we must be failing. Well, you don't want to fail, right? And so we scurry to respond in such a way that from that perspective looks more like success. And so not thinking, stepping aside, trying to prematurely leap over, can appear, even from a sincere place, like moving in the right direction, right? And that's really, I think, just because we're still developing not only our understanding, but our trust. Because it's hard to trust being motivated by suffering and wanting to release and be liberated from that suffering. It's hard to have faith when we encounter that suffering face to face that this is the path. Right? And it's like, no, this is the stuff I'm trying to free myself of. I'm not free of it in the moment if it's right in front in my face. You know, it's interesting that I think our struggle, you know, when I look back on my own practice, when I, you know, meet students in their practice and in a place of struggle, that the struggle is never with Zazen. Their Zazen is fine. I mean, I've never met a student over the years who is utterly not practicing Zazen. You know, they're just like in some other universe. I'm thinking. Very rare, let me say. And none of you. That generally, I mean, look, you know, this is not, you know, this is challenging, right? And so most people are not going to, even given all that I've just said, are not going to willfully and deliberately engage in a kind of inner sham. Right? For what? And so my experience is far and away that practitioners, you, are practicing sincerely and really doing your best, trying to practice in the best way you know how, and are doing that. Right? That's how the transmission occurs. That's how clarifying the path occurs. That's how developing your practice occurs. There is no other way. You can't just leap into some other person, to some other mind. And so the struggle is never that. It's our view. It's how we see it. And the conflict between what it is and what it should be in our mind. What it is and what we want it to be in our mind. That's the conflict. Right? Because a conflict is always between this and something. There has to be two parties involved. There has to be a subject and an object. When you diminish that gap, when you let go of that gap, in other words, you stop evaluating and judging and comparing your own practice, when you no longer are dwelling actively in those discriminatory views, there's just Zazen. So in that sense, the struggle is always the boundary between delusion and enlightenment, between what we perceive as ordinary and what we aspire to as sacred. And trusting that seems to take a long time. Because while the Dharma is saying this to us, is teaching us this, and while we do have some measure of faith, that faith is much newer in our lives than the faith we have established since the beginning of our lives in our own opinions. I mean, just add up the hours, you know, that you've devoted to developing and believing in your own opinions. And so that practice of having faith, applying that into your practice and then verifying that requires patience. I think not thinking, Yaoshan said. So this is not the same to think not thinking is not the same as thinking. And it's not the same as not thinking. That's why Dada Roshi in his commentary helps us understand both of those dualities. One is just being lost in thought, and the other is stopping the flow of thought. To think not thinking is not thinking, it's not suppressing thought, it's not stopping the mind. And so the student rightly asked, well, how do you think not thinking? And Yaoshan says, non-thinking. And Dogen here says, although the employment of non-thinking is crystal clear by its very nature, when we think of not thinking, we always use non-thinking. There is someone in non-thinking, and this someone maintains us. There is someone in non-thinking, and this someone maintains us. This someone is present in each and every moment. It is not you, but it is never apart from you. It is beyond every boundary, within every boundary. It is free of discriminating thought. It is present within discriminating thought. When we think of not thinking, we always use non-thinking in every moment of thinking, of not thinking, of thinking, not thinking. There is someone in non-thinking. This is what Dogen means when he says that from the beginning, the enlightened mind is replete within us. And so, unconstrained by ordinary thought, unconstrained by non-ordinary thought, by worldly thought, by mystic thought, what is this freedom? What is this unconstrained? This is the heart of Buddha Dharma. This is liberation. You know, again, that model of, you know, see the enemy, conquer it as a path to peace, is so deep within us that we apply that liberally in almost everything. And so the great revolution, the disruption, as I spoke about on Sunday, is another way, is that there is another way. But that means we actually have to practice another way. Dharushi says, non-thinking has no such edges. It's the boundless mind of samadhi that neither holds on nor lets go of thoughts. It is the manifestation of Buddha mind in which the duality of self and other, thinking and non-thinking, dissolve. Or rather, is just not created. It's not that something is becomes is not. It's that something that appeared as is realized as no. This is the Dharma of thusness that is the right thought of all the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. I love how he brings that into the Eightfold Path. This is the fundamental, the ultimate appearance of right thought. And so what does this mean in Zazen? In one moment, in one breath, in one awareness, in one holding on, in one letting go. To practice no before and no after. You can do that. When judgment arises, to practice non-judging. You can do that. When you find yourself caught in a powerful stream of thought, of emotion, of memory, of anticipation, to not suppress and to not indulge. You can do that. Right? Each of us has the capacity to do. If we couldn't do that, then we would send you a we would give you a note that says, go home forever. Right? Because there's no point in doing this. There's no point in doing this if you don't have that capacity. And if you don't have that capacity in every moment. Now, being able to embody that or be able to practice that in a way that you can recognize may not be so. Do you understand? So at any moment, at every moment, we can practice not suppressing and not engaging. But how that appears to you sometimes will not appear as not falling into one or the other. It will appear to you as though you are falling into one side or the other. Because that stream is so strong. That's all. In the same way that when you have a very strong emotion and you practice in that emotion, the emotion is still there. And so from that old succeeding or failing perspective, you could say, okay, this isn't working, I'm failing. Because I'm practicing this, but it's still there. But that's based on the assumption that if I trust and practice the Dharma, I get what I want. Nobody said that. But you do get what is true. You do get what is liberating. You do get a path unfolding. So in a certain sense, all any of us really needs to do is we need to have a basic understanding of the Dharma. What is your practice in this moment? And then just do your best. That's pretty much what each of us can do. The rest gets into the realm of control and management. And you will not be happy there. So we can do this. And all along there is someone who maintains us. This someone has no name, no form, no past, no present, no future. This someone is never absent, and yet you will never meet this someone. Not even in a dream. And yet all along it is because of this that we are here. It is because of this that bodhicitta can arise. It is because of this that you can have faith. It is because of this that you can start over. It is because of this that you can trust yourself. And practice sincerely even when it doesn't make sense. Right? And for a rational being, or for a being that sees itself as rational, that's a very powerful thing. To be able to be rational when it's useful, but also to realize that there's so much more and that there are so many realms in which rationality cannot get in the door. Right? It has its realm, just like thinking has its realm. But when we try to apply that to all realms, or we try to apply thinking and figuring things out to all of life, it just simply flat out does not work. It's not made for that. When the Dharma wheel turns, it always goes in both directions. When we free ourselves in this moment, because this moment is the result of past karma, the wheel turning in both directions means it's sitting present here in the present moment. It's also turning into the back, into the past, and it's also turning into the future. It turns in both directions, all directions. That the practice of this moment, because that's all there is, because there is no past and future other than in our mind and in our, you know, in what we hold within our being, not just thoughts. That's why liberation is possible. That's why it's possible to lighten and diminish and let go of our burdens, right? If they were fixed in a past that still existed, what could we do? The still point is its hub, and from here all of our myriad activities emerge. So, rather than giving solace to the body, give solace to the mind. And it's drawn here from a poem from the Womankind. And really that means rather than just trying to avoid the pain and maximize your pleasure, just to sort of get by, go deeper. Give solace to the mind. Now, when both body and mind are at peace, because of course mind and body are one, and so when we're not afraid of this moment's discomfort, of this moment's challenge, then we can practice with the whole body and mind and give peace to the whole body and mind. Now, he says, all things appear as they are, perfect and complete and lacking nothing. And this is what Sesshin is. This is why we're here. And so to have reverence for the Buddhas means, in the moment when you're practicing, to bring the Dharma, the teachings, to mind. Have faith in them. Practice them. Trust them. Right? When you see yourself reaching back again to what you already know, to the paths you've already traveled, and you know where they lead, have courage. Right? Be crazy. Try something new.
Thanks so much for listening. Please join us on October 18th to 21st at Zen Mountain Monastery for A Sudden Flash of Spaciousness, an introduction to mind training with Buddhist teacher and writer Judy Leaf. For details or to find out more about ZMM programs, visit our website at zmm.org.